Coming up on a Humankind special, medical patients often complain about how long it takes to get in to see the doctor and the cost of medical services. But a number of studies in recent years highlight a different concern, whether as a patient you experience kindness in healthcare.
People are busy, and there's no question that there's a lot of factors that contribute to stress and burnout in healthcare professionals. But from my perspective, there's no excuse to not be kind.
And being treated with basic courtesy and compassion was rated in one survey as the most important factor when a patient chooses a provider. We'll examine this challenge and visit some medical professionals who seem to be focusing on kindness in healthcare. I'm David Freudberg. Stay with us for Humankind. Humankind is produced in association with WGBH Boston. This special documentary project is supported by the Communitude Initiative at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing and by the Humankind Program Fund. You're listening to a Humankind special, Healthcare with Kindness. I'm David Freudberg.
I tell people all the time I'm the luckiest CEO in the world, and I believe it. I was homeless for quite some time, struggled with addiction.
But today, Sharon Chamberlain directs a highly regarded healthcare center in Reno, Nevada.
It's interesting in hindsight, you know, the hardest part when I was out there was feeling invisible. If I walk into a room today, people see me and people say hello and talk to me. But back then, if I had walked into a room, literally no one would actually see you. It was, and that was just, it makes you feel, or it made me feel, so useless and so hopeless.
And that may explain Sharon's deep commitment to the clinic she runs, which is known as Northern Nevada Hopes, and to their goal of treating patients with respect and kindness. They take care of about 12,000 patients on an annual budget of some $32 million, primarily derived from federal and state reimbursement as well as foundation funding.
I actually started out in Oregon at a syringe services program. And I had left a for-profit job to go into this part-time job and made a lot less money, all kinds of things, but I just wanted to do it because my soul was being sucked dry.
Having emerged from a period of homelessness after college, Sharon was glad to receive that paycheck earned at an airplane parts facility. But the work there left her feeling empty and uninspired, so she turned to different employment at a community agency providing sterile needles and safe disposal areas for addicts, a practice known as harm reduction.
So I went and I got this job, and my first night I went out in this van in Springfield, Oregon, underneath a bridge, a freeway bridge, and people just started coming out of the bushes all over the place. And there was probably 50 people coming out to access this service of syringe services. And it was fascinating. And I was like, wow, I was out there with a couple of staff and trying to act like I kind of knew what I was doing back then. Now I'm much more humble. I'm just like, I have no idea what I'm doing sometimes. And this guy came up, and he was very intoxicated, and he was talking, and he kind of started crying, and he gave me a hug. And when he gave me a hug, he urinated all over me. And I kind of fell back kind of onto the van thing, still kind of holding him and things. And I thought, these are my people, and this is exactly where I should be.
So through this unlikely path, Sharon Chamberlain found her calling. To help people living at the margins, like the inebriated man under the bridge.
I could feel him. He wasn't invisible. And he knew that. He knew that when I was hugging him. He knew that. And when I see individuals walk in this building, that's the number one thing, is I see them. And I want to make sure that they know, I see you. You're worth it.
Northern Nevada Hopes, where Sharon has worked since 2011 in downtown Reno, was founded primarily to serve people experiencing HIV back in 1997. Today, that population represents a small fraction of the vulnerable patients at Hopes.
We work with a lot of folks that are experiencing homelessness. We work with a lot of folks with serious mental illness and drug addiction challenges. And so many of our folks aren't welcome anywhere else in the community. And not just because of the things that I just listed, but also because they don't have any payer source. They don't have Medicaid, they don't have Medicare, they don't have private insurance. And so, having people here, we're talking about being kind, having people here that it doesn't matter, if you came in and you haven't taken a shower for a week, does not matter. None of those things matter to us. You're going to come in, you're going to get a hug. We're going to tell you we're glad that you're here, and we're going to say, what can we do today?
Coaxing patients to follow medical recommendations is a common challenge in healthcare. By one estimate, as many as 40% of patients do not adhere to the doctor's advice. At Hopes, the staff continues to work with patients to build a trusting relationship.
It's the asking them to come back. It's the letting the patients know that it's okay to fail. It's okay to make a mistake.
Tiffany Ogle is Director of Human Resources at Hopes.
They miss their appointment. Many places you're not welcomed back because you missed an appointment and gosh, somebody else could have taken that appointment. We don't do that. So I think it's just that constant letting people know that you care and letting them know that that there's somebody in their life that is on their side and is cheering them on, even if it's not to that finish line yet, but it's getting there. And you may have steps back and you may have steps forward, but there's always somebody in a team on your side to say, great, that's wonderful. Come back again, let's try again. We teach that to our employees here. It's okay, you're not gonna get a punitive action or disciplinary action because you made a mistake or you tried something. So same with our patients. They may come back and say, I wasn't ready to try. And I'm not ready to try right now. So it's, okay, well, what are you ready to do? And it's meet them where they're at versus force something at them.
On the average week, Northern Nevada Hope sees about 1,000 patients. And like many federally qualified community health centers, Hopes does a lot of patient satisfaction surveying. Some who come to the clinic do grumble about wait times and the automated phone system. But the survey results show around 90% of visitors report getting timely appointments and working with providers who are friendly and attentive.
Okay, so can you do something Wednesday tomorrow?
When I first came on the campus, it was so prevalent. Their kindness, the way that they looked at you, the way that you felt like a person. You felt human.
Christopher Harris arrived as a patient at Hopes about 11 years ago. He was diagnosed with full-blown AIDS, but had no symptoms.
Even though you had something that was that society considered horrendous, they made you feel human. It was as if I had nothing at all. I'm here for a checkup. So I got involved with them, becoming a volunteer with them, and I'm still here volunteering. Matter of fact, as soon as I finish here, I'll be on duty to volunteer. So these are some of the things that I enjoy immensely. And it's about the individuals, the staff here at Hopes. I have never been to any clinic or hospital where the medical staff was so compassionate and so concerned about your whole entire well-being and just not the situation that you're in.
I've never had the experience where the doctor called me at home and asked me, did you get the medicine that I prescribed you? Did you get the blood test that I needed you to take? This was the doctor calling.
Alex Johnson became a patient at the clinic about 3 years ago. He had suffered severe personal setbacks in a short period, a diagnosis of Alzheimer's for both his parents, then the deaths of his parents and of his 51-year-old wife. Then came a sharp financial reversal when Alex, who at one time owned several businesses, ended up in a shelter and in need of health care. He landed at Hope's, where the atmosphere was different from his experience at other clinics.
When you wait in a waiting room and then you feel, my goodness, I finally get to see the doctor. The doctor comes in and they haven't had the chance to review your chart. They don't know your name. It becomes so impersonal. And here at Hope's, the complete opposite occurs. What might be a 5-minute examination and interaction might become a 15 or 20 minute opportunity where even from the young gal taking the blood, not knowing they show and they care and they listen. I've never felt rushed here.
Nobody is micromanaged. Not one single individual is micromanaged.
Do you mean that the staff is not micromanaged?
Yes, the staff is not micromanaged. And I think that's the thing that allows them to give of their whole self towards their patients.
We're examining the importance of compassion and basic respect for medical patients. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. For more information on this segment, part one of Healthcare with Kindness, and to obtain audio downloads or CDs, please visit humanmedia.org. At its downtown Reno building, Northern Nevada Hopes employs physicians, nurse practitioners, and RNs, medical assistants, and a team of case managers, among others. Hopes does better than the national average in retaining staff, which is considered a positive sign, especially for providers working with a pool of patients who are under unusual strain.
We're all human. You know, we all come to work with our own personal stressors that have nothing to do with what's going on in the building when we walk into work. And so I don't think anyone's ever perfect at this all of the time.
Natalie Vogel is the chief medical officer and a practicing pediatrician at the clinic. She strives to keep on an even keel during sometimes hectic days.
Personally and professionally, that's something that I have really worked hard at, and I have days where I am short with staff and short with patients and am not living up to my own expectations. So if I see that in myself, you know, I forgive it in other people. But I think, you know, as an organization, we really try to practice the ideals of what a federally qualified health center is here to do, which is to take care of patients that are often challenging to take care of, that isn't necessarily their fault. They come from a whole host of bad experiences, being treated poorly, often have a lot of armor on them already by the time that we might interact with them.
Staff at Hope's taking a patient's blood pressure. There are about 1,400 federally qualified community-based medical centers operating throughout the United States. Their mission is to improve the health of underserved communities, regardless of a patient's ability to pay. As with all of these centers, at Northern Nevada Hopes, over half of the governing board is comprised of patients at the clinic. This is intended to ensure that actual patient experience is built into how the center sets its policies. Dr. Vogel.
We know as an organization that if we can meet someone where they are, whether that has to do with their current psychiatric state and where they are living and what trauma has occurred in their past and what their daily life is at home, if we can be open to any of those possibilities, even if, and not judge them, just accept them, but seek them out, then our ability to provide opportunities for someone to improve their health is much greater. If instead we expect that people will, you know, do what we say all of the time because we said it, we don't get very far.
Chief Executive Sharon Chamberlain.
We work with our providers to help them understand that, you know, the team as a whole, including the RNs and the medical assistants, you know, everybody part of the team, they're equal. They all have components that they're bringing to this patient's care, and that the appointment, when they walk into the room with a patient, it's not their appointment with a patient. It's the patient's appointment, and they're part of a team that's going to address all the needs that the patient shows up with.
Part of that is understanding how behavior change happens.
Physician Natalie Vogel.
Part of that is working in teams and saying, you know, hey, the medical provider actually might not really be good at this thing, and maybe the case manager in the team is much better and has the resources and the training and the knowledge to help with this piece. But if the case manager steps in, or the therapist steps in, or the nurse steps in, and they actually, you know, value the skills of every part of that team, our impact can theoretically, and it does, be much greater. But it's also on the patient to want that and to be ready for it and open to it. And we accept and work with our patients on the days they are interested in those things and on the days that they're not so interested in those things. And we doesn't mean we don't try again the next day.
Which requires an acceptance that progress sometimes occurs unevenly when someone heals from a medical condition. It can be a pattern of both setbacks and comebacks. Erin Eddings, Director of Case Management at HOPES, brings this approach to her interactions with patients as well as with staff.
If you're familiar with the term 86th, we work with patients who have been 86th from this hospital, that hospital, this specialty clinic, not allowed back on property.
Because they may have misbehaved.
Behaviorally gotten out of control, and we're the ones saying, you know what, we're going to keep trying. And we're going to be really firm, and we're going to have boundaries and tell you when you do need to leave our property today. But we're going to be here for you when you come back tomorrow, because we're going to try again.
I do think that as an organization, you also have to understand there are limits to that, that, you know, sometimes, and this, you know, it's just the reality, sometimes there are certain safety issues that, mm-hmm. you know, that certain mistakes are not tolerated. Not every mistake is tolerated, because there are lines and there are boundaries even within that. But if you don't start from creating an environment where you can, you know, support people through the good and the bad, then you don't even have the luxury of defining what the real limits are.
I think a lot of it has to do with everybody goes through things.
HOPES patient Richard Harris.
There are trials and tribulations that everybody has to face in the course of their life. Even the staff members here at HOPES, sitting with talking with several of them, they share their life history and stuff with you. They'll even share it with the clients. There might be an employee here who has gone through some of the same situations as some of the clients have, and have overcome those obstacles and things in the course of their life. And so with that, with them being able and allowed that that freedom to express these thoughts with their clients and things and give their whole self over to their jobs and to their community and to one another.
When Richard Harris visits HOPES as a regular volunteer, he likes to connect with staff and patients to offer a reassuring word. Richard retired several years ago from his job as supervisor of engineering documentation at a company that performed bookbinding. Today, he donates his time.
Every time I come to HOPES, when I come in, the first thing I do is I come over to the main clinic. I start from the bottom, and I work my way up, and I go to every individual that I come in contact with and encourage them. And give them encouragement and show them how I appreciate the things that they have done for us, because I feel that they need encouragement as well as the clients.
Healthcare can be frenetic and draining for staff. There's the incessant time crunch of trying to see as many patients as efficiently as possible, the increasing volume of mandatory regulations. All this can fray the nerves of the best-intentioned of providers. So HOPES allows staff a way to vent. Tiffany Ogle in Human Resources.
We have things like what we call difficult conversations or telling your truth. So we encourage people that when you have something that you may disagree with another coworker, rather than run up the chain and tell a manager and expect the manager to go talk to the person, we actually encourage that person to speak with the person that they're having that difficulty with and to tell their truth. And that's part of that shared language. So we may start the conversation with, hey, I need to talk to you and I need to tell you my truth. And you kind of know where this is going to go, and you understand, and it becomes very genuine and kind of lowers that animosity and that whole anxiety with that conversation.
And do you think that that reduces how threatened the person feels who is being challenged on some behavior?
Absolutely. I've experienced it myself. And just those entry words help kind of set the tone, and it reminds you, oh, okay, here's the work that we've been doing, and we're gonna work on this right now, and we're actually gonna, you know, role play this. And it really does help, and it gives you that genuineness in a person.
We really are very intentional about creating a space where there's respect and openness.
Sharon Chamberlain.
We were talking about difficult conversations. I have staff come into my office as the CEO and sit down and tell me and have a difficult conversation with me about something that I said that made them unhappy or that was, too brusque or something, and they let me know. And that's what we want, and we want that for everybody, including the providers. I think our providers initially are always a little shocked, but then I feel like they're coming into the environment and they say, wow, I love this. They stay.
Alex Johnson, the patient who suffered multiple family deaths and a financial setback, fell into a depression several years ago. I had lost my will, he told me.
Sometimes I'd ride the bus at night so I could sleep during the day. Other times I rode the bus to be out of the cold. And then I ended up for a few months in the men's shelter. But through it all, I kept coming back here.
At the Hopes Clinic, he says, he was able to access medication and psychological support.
And the counselors, and especially my provider, one day she saw me walking and asked me if she could give me a ride. And I was embarrassed and told her that I could just walk, it was no problem. She said, I want to give you a ride. And she took me to the homeless shelter, which is where I was living. I was so full of shame of who I had become. I was embarrassed, I was angry. I realized after all the pain and anger that it wasn't directed to my wife or my parents or God. I hated myself.
How did you begin to rebuild from that low point?
It was honestly the people that would look in my eyes and see that I wanted to have help.
Are you referring to staff here?
Absolutely. I would come over here and just hang out because I had nowhere else to go. They'd make you leave the shelter at 8 in the morning because they wanted you to go out and find a job or get off the property. And I didn't have the strength or the desire or the appeal. I didn't think I could ever do anything but just wander. And I was fortunate enough that upon getting ID and identification and all, then I was able to take the next steps. And so they did a small job interview at the shelter. The opportunity was to become a janitor at a candy company here in Reno. And I interviewed for it, and I went over, and unfortunately they told me that the position wasn't for me. And they smiled and said, but we'd like you to join our sales team. And now, almost 2 years later, I'm the vice president of research and development and business development. I travel around the country. I've got an incredible job. I love what I do.
And it turns out that working in research and development at a candy company means sampling many tasty treats.
The opportunity for me to start over again at 62 years old is a gift. I think what I can do to serve and to give back is to never forget where I've been, but also look forward. And looking forward for me is to speak with confidence and love and compassion and thank the people here at Hopes for giving me a new life. And so for me to inspire others, you've got to ask for help. You've got to ask for help.
And today, Alex Johnson lives in his own place in Reno.
It took several months of living in the shelter to save the money just to get a deposit on an apartment. The cost of living in Reno is extremely disproportionate to the wages. So I was able to secure an apartment, even getting a checking account, all the steps to start all over. And without a vehicle, I did a lot of walking. By choice, I still walk. I'm proud to say I walk 8 or 10 miles a day. And I come back to hopes for all my health care and all the people, because this is the best place that I've ever had interactions. All I take is some cholesterol medicine. I don't need to come here, but I love coming here.
Special thanks on this segment to Mary Ingvoldstad and Tiffany Ogle of Northern Nevada Hopes. Coming up, nurses in the Twin Cities describe the day-to-day challenge of maintaining compassion for patients and colleagues. When Healthcare with Kindness continues on Humankind in a moment.